Sacramento Experimental Forest, which, as those of you who know me know, that this is my favorite piece of dirt on the planet. We've learned a lot of lessons from this truly unpleasant experience, but unfortunately, I'm only going to be able to share a few of those today. One of the things we learned is that there is just not much information on the environmental effects of gas exploration for natural gas, particularly in the eastern United States. The Fur Oak Experimental Forest is located in West Virginia, and shame on you if you don't already know that. It was established in 1934. When the land was purchased in 1928, the mineral rights were not purchased, and that's part of the problem. They're privately held. We specialize in long-term research on the Fur Oak Experimental Forest, both watershed research and silvicultural research. In summer of 2007, the company that had leased the mineral rights proposed drilling a gas well on our long-term reference watershed. Some of you heard from me. We were able to convince them not to put it there, but in January 2008, they selected another site, which is also a long-term research compartment. It was not one of our gauged watersheds, but one of our silviculture compartments, and began site preparation for a natural gas well. And this is in the Arisconey sandstone, so this is not a Marcellus well, and the big difference is the volume of water and the size of the well. This is a fairly traditional natural gas well. And just to be sure, this is not an outhouse in these pictures. To make sure you knew that. So, when they're doing natural gas development, fluids are injected down into the well during the drilling and to fracture the bedrock so that they can release the gas and pump it out. So those fluids come back up, or some of them do, and they are placed in a pond, a holding pond, like this one here on the screen. And then, per state law, it is completely legal, they are landified. They are landified, and there's about 300,000 liters that were applied on an area of about 0.2 hectares on the Fur Oak Experimental Forest. Our soils are inceptisols, and it's a mixed hardwood forest. So one of our technicians was out in the forest while the land application was going on, which is June 21st when they started it, and immediately noticed symptoms like this. Bronzing and necrosis of foliage, dieback, utter death and destruction. And this picture up here, this is greenbrier. You cannot kill greenbrier with herbicides, but it was pretty effectively killed by the gas well effluent. About a week later, a little over a week later, all the trees dropped their green leaves. So at that point, we decided that we needed to do something. We were obviously fairly clueless. We were told beforehand that there would be no effect. I don't trust anyone anymore. I'm trying to laugh about this because I get really annoyed if I get really grumpy if I don't. So what this told us, first of all, is that there are two methods of damage. And first is just direct contact. The second is uptake by the larger trees because they did not spray this on the foliage of the trees. So we wanted to look at what was going on. 2 weeks later, or actually this is next growing season, this is in April, the one, upper one's in April, lower one is in May, the trees are pretty much dead and the bark's falling off the beach, and as you can tell from this picture, I was fairly well disgusted. So we decided to look at the soil chemistry, see if we could determine what sorts of things caused the damage, and also look at trends over time. We basically wanted to address two questions. Is there a treatment effect or an effect of the application of the fracking fluids? And then did that effect change over time? So we have the application area and we have a reference area. We don't have pretreatment data. We don't have replication. God forbid we should have more than one of these. We ran a number of transects through the areas, collected soil samples. It's only the top 10 centimeters. They were composited and analyzed them. Jennifer took a class in Glimix yesterday. I've already done that. So here are some of the results. And again, we had two questions. Are there differences between the treatment and the reference area? And is there, does that change over time? So if we look at the interactions, interestingly enough, the only things that showed up as significant interactions of time versus the treatment, which is not a true treatment, but anyway, are acidity, sodium, and chloride. If we look at differences between the treatment areas, or treatment and the reference area, we have a number of things that have showed up as significant. Magnesium, calcium, aluminum, cation exchange capacity, manganese, zinc. So there were a number of differences, and I'm only going to talk about a few of them here today just because of time. Obviously, there was a little bit of salt in this fluid. And incidentally, the fracking and drilling fluids are proprietary, so they don't have to tell you what they're using. They give you MSDS sheets, material safety data sheets, but they don't have to tell you everything that's in there. So obviously there was a lot of sodium or salt applied. You can see that it did change significantly over time. And quite a bit lower in the reference area than in the application area, but they did leach out over time. Same with chloride. So there were a lot of salts that were involved in the application and in the fracking. Soil acidity was fairly interesting because they were we saw a delayed effect on soil acidity, and as the potassium and magnesium, potassium and chloride were leaching out here, the pH decreased on the application area, whereas they were not significantly different initially. Breeze through that one. Soil calcium is interesting. Started out with soil calcium being higher on the application area, and again, this first sample is immediately after the fluids were applied, and then it increases over time. Remember that there was a large drop in leaf litter, or most of the leaves that were there at the time fell. It's about 50% of our annual, between 25 and 50% of our annual leaf fall biomass. So there was a lot of calcium in those leaves. And so we think that there's something going on here with soil organic matter as a result of that early leaf fall. I'm going racing through this, but anyway. So in summary, legal additions of fracturing and drilling effluent to about 0.2 hectares resulted in dramatic effects on the vegetation. We found that red maple, not surprisingly, was the most resistant to the effects of the effluent, and American beech was most susceptible. It pretty well killed all the beech, and it never sprouted back. It's gone. The main constituents, obviously, were sodium and chloride, but, you know, calcium and potassium were also part of this. The other things that we found, we managed to get one sample from the pond, from the retention pond, and we found high levels. We had a colleague do a screening study for us. They found high levels of lead and palladium, medium to low levels of calcium, and low levels of rhodium. I don't know what that means, but clearly there's more in this fracking fluid than they would like to admit. The large midsummer addition of green leaves has probably altered some of the nutrient cycling over time, and sodium and chloride levels, while they decreased rapidly in the upper soil horizons, other changes showed up over time. So some of our conclusions from the study are that, first, a concentration-based standard for land application was not sufficient to protect the forest. And I was talking with Andy Burton about this beforehand. Duh. All the air pollution work and everything that we've done tells us it's the dose. It's not the concentration. But the state standard in West Virginia for land application of drilling and fracking fluids is a concentration-based fluoride, iron, and pH. It's not about dose, it's about concentration. So the one good thing that came out of this is that currently there is a moratorium on land application of drilling and fracking fluids from the Marcellus Shale. And a Marcellus well will use 1 million gallons of water or fluids compared with about 100,000 gallons on this site. So something good came out of it. While the salts appear to have been leached very quickly from the 0 to 10 centimeter horizon, the effects on the vegetation are longer term. I mean, dead is dead. We don't know where all the added salts and these other chemicals that were added ended up. We were reacting, and we need to do some leaching studies before this takes off to a great extent and land application becomes common again and when it's allowed to happen. So, with that, I would be glad to take any questions. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We'll start over. There's Mark.
Well, yeah, I'm really interested in this, not that I was doing the class, but I looked at that. My understanding is there are a lot of organic chemicals and a whole range of, I mean, that fracking fluid that they won't say what's in it, it's really pretty complex.
Right.
So do you think it was the salt, or do you really know where it was salt or something else, but who knows what it was?
I think the effects on the vegetation were predominantly due to the salts, but I think there are a lot of other effects, long-term effects, and particularly when we're talking about water quality, that are probably due to all those other things that we don't know about. So,
yeah, I was wondering if anything has shown up in drinking water or something like that in other places.
There are places in Pennsylvania and somewhere else in the Appalachian region where they believe that they have seen fracking chemicals showing up in well water. I don't think it's well documented. One of the reasons we were so stupidly trusting is there's nothing in the literature, virtually nothing in the literature for the eastern United States on you know, the effects of natural gas development. So. We weren't able to find anything, so we, again, sort of stupidly believed them when they said there would be no major effects. So.
Have you discussed this with the regulators?
I have, but because this is recorded and because I'm a federal employee, we need to talk about this afterwards.
If we don't have the regulations in place to protect our forests, I mean, all you're doing is documenting a treatment.
Right. The state DEP has come and looked at the site, and they were quite astounded.
Well, that was a shock. And EA, which is basically all
there wasn't, but we can't talk about that. We'll talk about that afterwards. There are, yeah, we need to talk about that. Since you're getting ready to retire, you can be a rabble rouser. Bill. No, unfortunately it's not. This area is located just off of a karst limestone. It's, you know, go up a little higher in elevation and the karst starts outcropping. So on that side of the furrow, we don't have any gauge watersheds because it's hard to do in karst topography. So we sample main elk lick, which is at the very edge of the furrow. The furrow encompasses most of the elk lick watershed. But by then, it's diluted enough that we're not going to find anything. Mike?
Because I wonder, yeah, fair
we did look at some of that. And that's one thing I would ask of you all is if you have good references or citations, because we found some on road salt, but not necessarily a lot. We've been told that it's not applicable. and that's another discussion we should have later. But yeah, we looked pretty high and wide to try and find some of those. Some of the symptoms, like on the magnolia leaf, these sort of look like salt, you know, toxicity, but some of the other symptoms they don't, or some of the other species they don't.